the other two very well. I think your third one, if I remember right, was can the SSC reject the Plan B assessment? The short answer is yes. There's a agency policy or procedural directive, I forget which, on best scientific information available, and it acknowledges that there may be occasions when an SSC does not agree with the findings of the assessment review panel, but the SSC has to explain in detail what their reasons are for disagreeing with the review panel. I would also add the caveat that our region is a little different than some other regions in that the SSC does not normally review assessments. And both the policy directive that I referred to, and I think perhaps our SSC documents say that the SSC should avoid redoing a peer review, reviewing a peer review, because we've got it set up in our region that that's a separate process from the SSC process. I think your first question, I'll offer my opinion, which I don't think is actually addressed in the assessment policy review document. What happens if the management track panel rejects a Plan B assessment? In my opinion, then they need to come up with a way to set catch advice, or they're not addressing a term of reference. Because one of the terms of reference is, you know, provide catch advice or a method for catch advice for the SSC. And if they don't do, if they reject the current method, then I think they would have to come up with a different one. I will hold my tongue on your second question about whether they can change a Plan B assessment.
Libby?
I just want to say thanks for those answers, Tom, and the thoughts on some of them. And I equally apologize for sending them just before. I was a woman moving show this weekend. So after last week and this weekend, this was sitting down here a half hour before was the first time I got a chance to put this to paper. Thanks.
And they are excellent questions that need to be answered. So thank you for forwarding them.
Anybody else for Dr. Hare at this point? Anybody from the audience? Back to you, Dr. Hare.
Thank you very much. So, you know, we talked about this. We're still operating on a continuing resolution. I believe it expires December, you know, end of next week. So we're still waiting for our FY23 budget. In terms of our surveys, Science Center, we released sort of our quick survey summaries. Autumn Bottom Trawl and Fall Ecomon posted online. Fall Ecomon lost 8 of 18 days owing to ship crew shortages and COVID. And Autumn Bottom Trawl survey lost 14 of 58 days owing to multiple cases of COVID on leg one and leg two. And the results of both of those were decreased in sampling effort in Gulf of Maine and on Georgia's Bank. For the Autumn Bottom Trawl survey, samples were made in every strata, but fewer samples than planned. And the, you know, the consequences of that will play out over the next several years in our assessment processes. The Fall Bottom Longline, which is done on collaboratively with commercial vessels, was successfully completed. Funding is still tenuous for several of the surveys in our region. The NEMAP, Maine, New Hampshire were specifically identified in the FY22 budget for full funding. And then we need the FY23 budget to support full funding for those to be able to fund those fully. So we're waiting for FY23. We also have funding, sort of tenuous funding for the shrimp survey. And so we're working with ASMFC and others to you know, try to evaluate whether that survey continues, and if so, how. And then we've have some funding issues with the scallop survey. Costs of the sharp are going up, so we're working to increase funding for that. And again, we're waiting for the FY23 budget. In terms of observer program, our data quality group still expects to have the observer data backlog cleared by the end of the first quarter of 2023. We talked about the ASM spend plan already, and we continue to train a lot of observers working with Kunimesset Farm Foundation in particular for ASM training. And I just wanted to say that Nicole Cabana, the deputy director, and I address each observer class, and we stress four things. First is that the data that they collect is important, and sort of the quality and integrity of that data is important. Second, that working with the captain and crew, critical. It's a critical part of being an observer. That partnership is essential. Third is to really sort of think about, you know, safety at sea, and to not, you know, tolerate harassment at sea. And then fourth is that there are a number of resources for them within the Northeast Fishery Science Center, within the fishing industry, their employers. And so just to remember that there are a number of people who are helping them. And I think those, you know, conversations have been useful, and have helped us emphasize the points that we want every observer to know who's coming to work in this region. And so I've talked about the assessment updates. On the cooperative research updates, there are two cooperative research summits, one January 31st in Newport News and the other February 15th in Providence, Rhode Island. I think the closing date to express interest in attending those is this week, I believe. And if anyone's interested in sort of getting that information, just email me and I can forward you the link so that you can put your name in to be able to participate. In terms of our work around wind energy development, the federal survey mitigation strategy was finalized and released today. Thank you to the council for providing comments on that, and thank you to others of you who also provided comments on it. That is sort of our blueprint for how we are going to address the interaction between offshore wind energy development and Northeast Fishery Science Center survey effort going forward. 13 of our surveys are going to be impacted, and so it's a significant issue for us to work to address. We continue to support the regional office in the regulatory review process, and so that working relationship continues to be excellent. In terms of the climate, we heard about the climate scenario planning conversation that we're going to have here at the council. I also just wanted to make everyone at the council aware that there's, you know, the NOAA level planning for the Climate Ecosystem and Fisheries Initiative continues. This initiative would bring state-of-the-art climate projections into the fishery science and fisheries management arena. And in this region, Northeast region, it will build on the Northeast climate integrated modeling effort, which is led by Dr. Kerr, who's now at University of Maine. And it is dependent on FY23 funding, but we are putting all the pieces in place to be able to support that. In terms of protected species, Mr. Pentney talked about the work of the take reduction team, and I just want to acknowledge the hard work of the team at the center, the decision support tool team that worked to support the take reduction team process. They're doing a tremendous job and being responsive to requests to evaluate different scenarios. That's it for my report, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to take any other questions.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Hare. Anyone from the council? Anyone from the public? Back to the council. Hold on, I got Ron Smallwoods. Go ahead, Ron, and then I'll go back to the council.
Regarding that, the workshops on cooperative fishing, John, are you aware that there's no seats available? I know some CFF people told me they were interested a couple of weeks ago, but went online and it was closed for attendance.
Yeah, I had heard that there was a lot of interest in those. The seats are full. They are limited by the capacity of the venue. So I apologize that we don't have room for everyone who wants to attend.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else from the public? Back to the council. Mr. Smith and Ms. Etrie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks, Dr. Hare, for providing the information that John just sent over to us on the spend plan. I did have one last question on that, I promise. And that is, I'm trying to understand the difference between the industry C-Day costs and the electronic monitoring costs. I guess I think I know what the industry C-Day costs are. Could you just talk a little bit about what goes into the electronic monitoring cost line item there? It's been $1.5 to $2 million a year for the last 5 years.
Yes, we review first. We develop the databases.
Thank you. I have to go back and look in terms we have sort of talked about how we've used the electronic monitoring funds in the past. Going so I can provide you with the answers that we've given to the council before. Going forward, that supports the agency's review of the primary review of the electronic monitoring data. So it's a data quality assurance step that Northeast Fisheries Science Center takes, and then the sort of requirements around how to handle those data.
So that's a secondary review cost, basically?
Yeah, it is technically, you would call it secondary review. It's a QAQC process for the electronic monitoring review. It's done sort of by companies that the industry is contracting with.
You all set? Okay, Ms. Etrie.
Thanks. Just a quick question. I'm still trying to wrap my head around the implications of the miss stations with the survey. Is there a standardized approach that stock assessments use when they find that certain areas that are typically surveyed weren't surveyed in and they have data gaps, or is that ad hoc assessment scientist to assessment scientist? Well, assessment scientist to stock assessment.
So in this particular year, there are no data gaps because as I look at the maps and I'll check, every strata was sampled. But there will be increased sort of variance in the strata estimates because there are fewer samples. So in terms of how that will be handled in assessments, it should be handled in a sort of standard fashion. There will be more uncertainty in the abundance estimates coming out of the fall 2022 survey because there were fewer samples in every strata, if that answers your question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So then if there's more uncertainty to one survey, that doesn't necessarily, like, then it becomes part of the assessment process and how to weight that compared to what you have for historical information. And if it looks like it's, you know, it's uncertain because there's less stations, but it's reflective of the previous year's information, that's all just part of the discussions that will occur at the assessment process? Or is there like a formulaic, this is more uncertain, therefore?
I think at that point it's a assessment by assessment because different assessments include different surveys. So in an assessment where the fall 2022 survey is the only survey, that will be a different conversation than an assessment where there are 20 other surveys in the assessment. So at that point it becomes sort of an assessment by assessment evaluation.
Anyone else from the council? Seeing none. Dr. Hare?
I'm done, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Next up is the Mid-Atlantic Liaison Report. The Mid-Atlantic Council met back the first week in October, and all the details are behind tab 9. Thank you, Joan, as always. But essentially, some of the highlights are they approved the public comment, a draft amendment for the separation of Atlantic surf clam and ocean quahogs. They initiated an omnibus EFH amendment. They set their version of specs for dogfish, which we'll deal with here on Thursday morning. And they also agreed to, the Protected Resource Committee recommended, and the council agreed to send a letter on the right whale strike reduction rule. They came to a consensus, of course, we did not. The total summary is certainly available to you for you to read. They meet also next week in Annapolis. It is a webinar, so anybody that likes can do it in your pajamas from home. And just of interest, on Tuesday, the council meets jointly with the ASMFC Fluke Scup and Black Sea Bass Management Board, and they're going to go over the harvest control framework, set scup, black sea bass, and summer flounder recreational measures, and then they're going to meet with the policy board to talk about recreational reform. And also on Wednesday, that council will discuss monkfish, and dogfish and monkfish, of course, are jointly managed by us and the Mid-Atlantic, so we have to have some sort of concurrence. If we don't, there are rules. And except for pointing out to a lot of people in New England who would love the New England Council to manage mackerel, we do not manage mackerel, but we can certainly talk about a variety of issues related to the mackerel fishery on Thursday. With that, that's it for me. I'm happy to answer any questions either now or after you actually read the materials behind tab 9 if you so choose. Any questions? Anybody in the public? Seeing none. Next up, Ms. Kearns for the ASMFC report. Tony, whenever you're ready. Hang on, Tony. Sorry, while we're waiting, I didn't see if Mr. Hughes or Mr. Bellavance wanted to add anything to my report. I got one no, I got two no's. Okay. Tony, you should be ready.
There you go.
Perfect.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. And the commission met a couple weeks ago in New Jersey for our annual meeting. The Atlantic Herring Board met and approved a seasonal quota approach for Area 1A in the Atlantic Herring fishery. That's where we put 72.8% of the 1A quota from June to September and 27.2% of the 1A quota to October through December. Through an email vote, the board did approve terms of reference for the river herring assessment, and that term of reference does include one term of reference to look at whether or not we can do a more biologically based approach for the catch caps that both the councils use, and that was at the request, I believe, of the Mid-Atlantic Council. We'll do our best to get that term of reference done, but it doesn't require the term of reference to be met in order for the assessment to move forward in case it's not possible. The Lobster Board changed the addendum that is looking at resiliency in the Gulf of Maine fishery. The plan development team is going to go back and work on it some more, but the board directed them to look at a single trigger level in terms of when we would make management changes to the Gulf of Maine lobster fishery, and the PDT will work on that and bring it back to the management board for consideration for public comment at its next meeting. The Atlantic Striped Bass Board received the 2022 stock assessment. It indicated that the resource is no longer experiencing overfishing, but still remains overfished. The board also approved a draft addendum that would consider allowing the voluntary transfer of striped bass commercial quotas in the ocean fisheries only. And those public hearings will start this week and go through the beginning of January. If anybody's interested in participating in any of the hearings, they are posted on our webpage. The Atlantic Menhaden Board set the 2023 total allowable catch at 233,550 metric tons. This is about a 20% increase from the TAC from last year. And we did this based on the positive stock status of the resource under the ecological base reference points. The board also approved the new addendum for allocating the commercial fishery for Atlantic Menhaden. It does two things to create the tiers. First, it creates a three-tier system to give a minimum allocation to each of the states, and then it uses landings-based information from 2018, 2019, and 2021 to set the rest of the quota. The addendum also looks at some new provisions for the incidental catch and small-scale fishery, and most notably, it does take persanes out of as one of the approved gear types for that fishery. And that is my report, Mr. Chairman. I can take any questions.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Kearns. Any questions from the council for Ms. Kearns? Mr. Alexander.
Thank you, Tony, for the report. I'm just curious, is there a tentative timeline for the river herring assessment?
That's a great question. I believe that that assessment should be completed by summer, late summer, early fall of 2024. But let me just double check that. If I am incorrect, I will email you or Tom on that date.
Thank you very much.
Anyone else from the council? Ms. Denise.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mark, I'm sorry, Ms. Kearns, I have a question. You know, you were at the NRCC meeting when we expressed our concerns about declines in the level of port sampling. I was just curious whether ASMFC had any discussion about that at their meeting. And if so, if there's any ideas that have surfaced that might help us address this shortfall.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Tom. Yes, while we didn't have a discussion at the commission meeting, the commission has offered to facilitate a conversation between NOAA Fisheries, whether that be the regional office or the science center or both, and our states to see if there are anything there, see if there is anything that we can do to help out with this deficiency. And, you know, whether that help means the states, while they are already getting samples for their requirements of their state FMPs, that they can pick up some additional species or something else, but we are happy to facilitate that conversation. We've made that offer at NRCC meetings, but no one has followed up on that request from NOAA or the Science Center for us to facilitate that, but the offer is still on the table for us to do.
Ms. Denise?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Kearns. I guess I'm unclear if there's something the council could do to hopefully press that forward. And I don't know if that... I don't know if that question should be directed to you or to due to the Fisheries Service.
I would.
Go ahead, Tony.
The service? If Mike or John? I mean, I guess you could send us a letter to ask us to do it, Tom, and then we would reach out to them and do so, or an email. I mean, I don't think it has to be a formal letter, but we're happy to do that. But we would need NOAA to be able to engage with that with us.
And I don't know if we need a formal letter. How about if we reach out to ASMFC to set up a conversation? Senator can reach out to Ms. Kearns. But if the council wants to send a formal letter, I don't want to get in the way of that.
Are we happy with the conversation?
Conversation works great for me.
It works for Mr. Neese as well. Anyone else have a question for Ms. Kearns from the council? Anybody from the audience, the public? Seeing none, back to the council. Thank you, Ms. Kearns. We'll see you in a day or so in person, I believe. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Next up, we have the United States Coast Guard report. Captain Frederick.
Mr. Chair, council members, good afternoon. I'll run through our enforcement numbers for the past few months. So we've conducted 169 fishing vessel boardings with 8 violations for a 99% compliance rate observed. Of those violations, you can see them there. Really nothing significant. This stands out or out of the ordinary. Some species retention violations, federal fisheries permit violations, and 4 closed area incursions. For safety, we conducted 117 dockside boardings, issued 100 decals. At sea safety boardings, 191. We issued 58 violations aboard 38 vessels and 2 terminations during this period for 80% compliance rate. And you can see the specific safety violations there. In terms of responses, search and rescue and others responded to 20 fishing vessel cases, 9 equipment casualties, 1 vessel taking on water, 2 collisions, a grounding, 2 fires, 2 vessel sinkings, for a total of 45 fishermen assisted. Probably the most interesting bullet there. We did respond to 1 unexploded ordnance aboard a vessel when they hauled that ordnance aboard, and we brought the EOD out and detonated it. 2 medevacs, and fortunately no fishing-related deaths. And pending any questions, that concludes my report, sir.
Yeah, thank you, Captain. Ironically, it was the Ocean State from the Ocean State that had that unexploded ordnance. So, any questions for Captain Frederick on his report from the council? Anyone from the public? Back to the council. Seeing none, thank you for your report, Captain. Next up, Caleb Gilbert for the no enforcement report. Hang on, Caleb. Sorry, you should be all set, Caleb.
Now, anyone hear me?
Barely.
Okay, you're coming in through my computer, Mike. I tried to set it up through my phone. Sorry about that. I'll try to talk directly into my computer. Is that any better?
I'm not sure it's any better, to be honest with you.
I'm terribly sorry. I don't know how to switch it over from my settings. It's always worked fine for my phone, but I don't know what to do, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, get to it, Gaylord.
Okay, I'll speak loudly. Good afternoon, council members. I'd like to start with a few year-end summary statistics for FY22. NED staff conducted a total of 297 patrols. 106 of these patrols occurred at sea, and 173 were land-based. There was even 1 air patrol where an officer partnered on a U.S. Coast Guard overflight. Sworn staff in that time period issued 98 summary settlement offers, for a total of just over $95,000. As of the time that I pulled this data, about 3 weeks ago, I believe, 74,000 of that summary settlement have been paid. On the NOVA side, we assessed a total of $345,717, $266,200 of that total has been settled. And last, for case summary data for FY22, we opened a total of 983 cases while closing 991. 407 cases remained open as of the close of the FY fiscal year. Moving on to our ongoing enforcement priorities within the Northeast Division, some right whale and observer-related highlights that I'll share, starting on right whales and take reduction plan compliance. You can see on pages 8 and 9 of the written report, if you choose to click on that, figures 2 and 3 that we compiled right whale gear patrol and violation statistics in the same fashion we compiled them for the council in late September in the third quarter FY22 written report then. As shown in the fourth quarter written report for this meeting, we have statistics combined from OLE and our enforcement partners showing 596 individual vessels were inspected across 69 take reduction plan focused patrols. About 79% of those vessels were compliant with a take reduction plan violation. That's actually a tick up from what we saw in the third quarter, about 73% compliance rate in the third quarter. Moving on to speed enforcement, our other prong of right whale enforcement. This is also a FY22 year-end summary. We have charged 22 speed rule cases prosecuted from the 2021-22 seasonal management area season. I think that's up from 18 reported to the council in September. So four new speed rule cases prosecuted since the last time the New England Council met. We assessed a total of over $200,000 penalties in those cases, and 20 of those cases have now settled. We documented our specific speed enforcement efforts in the written report. Speed enforcement continues to involve all available technologies at our disposal, including AIS and various radar devices. I mentioned we acquired a land-based M2 mobile radar unit the last council meeting. That was purchased primarily for enforcing SMA speed restrictions. Since the September meeting, various OLE staff have been trained to operate the device, and it will be deployed in the coming SMA operations over the winter. And speaking of SMA ops, we conducted our first of the year off of New York 2 weeks ago, targeting the main shipping channel coming into New York. Our officers identified multiple violations. Those cases are ongoing. And now that our land and at sea speed operations are underway for the current season, our IST staff continue to aid our agents and officers in the field. And just for summary, the suspected speed violations are our agents and officers conduct the investigations, and our investigative support team staff aid them with research and case documentation, such as by compiling GIS charts, investigative reports, and general vessel data. Moving on to our observer priority in the fourth quarter, OLE continued working with the observer program, fisheries monitoring and operations branch, FMO staff on port-specific roundtable events. With observer staff, we collaborated monthly with FMO to identify issues where compliance assistance and outreach may be provided to individual vessels or at individual ports. And we met ad hoc in the field at a couple port-specific outreach events. We also continue to meet with FMO staff quarterly to engage on specific pressing needs and discuss our general collaboration strategy. More specific details on those activities are also in the written report for this meeting, starting on the bottom of page 9. In addition to our routine observer-related enforcement activities are listed in the table 3, starting at page 10. OLE is not handling observer program-related casework differently while we prioritize this effort to aid the observer program. And as I've reported to the council previously, there is no new law associated with this priority. The goal of this priority continues to be to reduce the overall number of observer-related incidents and help encourage observer retention through our additional outreach activities, such as what I just mentioned. We'll continue our observer program priority efforts as we move further into FY23. More recently, I'll note in the current FY, FMO staff and OLE collaborated to host 3 SAS-related groundfish industry training events, the last of which was hosted a week ago. Attendance was fairly low at these events. Center and OLE staff plan to host more of these events in the new year, broadened to include other fisheries. We're brainstorming methods to increase industry participation at future similar events. And the last item I'd like to highlight to the council today, unrelated to our priorities, is that the last operator involved in the Carlos Rafael settlement agreement completed their probation period on August 19th. We highlighted this point in the written report as well. He was the last of 17 operators who were monitored at increased rates under settlement agreements, which include notifying OLE when sailing, increased VMS reporting to VMS 15 minutes when they did, and sending in two catch reports per day. I hope the council could hear some of that. I know my neighbors could. With how loud I was talking. That concludes my report, Mr. Chairman. You can hear me still.
I can still hear you. Thank you, Mr. Gilbert. Any questions for Mr. Gilbert on his report from the council? Anyone from the public? Council? Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Gilbert, and good luck to you. Hope your daughter feels better.
Thank you, Chairman.
Next up, we have the NTAP report. Mr. Salerno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the Northeast Advisory Panel has met one full meeting. It was back in November 21st. It was a web-based meeting. Basically, the focus of the meeting was looking at the orientation document that we are developing. And at that meeting, we presented to the full group, you know, just the background of why we're doing it, you know, just an outline of the orientation document itself and other key points that we wanted the group to focus on when they were reviewing this. We also gave them, you know, the process of how to go about commenting on it. The full NTAP panel has until December 15th to provide final comments. Then the subcommittee, which is made up of myself, Dr. Pohl, Justin Gregg, and Dr. Ford, will be compiling those comments in a short meeting in mid-December here. And then we will have an updated draft that will be dispersed, discussed at our next full panel meeting, which will be January 19th, actually in Narragansett. It will be the first in-person NTAP meeting in probably two years or so. At that point, we will just finalize any comments there, and we anticipate having it either in February or March, getting it to the councils for review, this orientation document. And just one final note, the working group that is looking at the fall restrictor work that was done, they are actually meeting right now, getting an update on what the preliminary results were in the fall. So maybe we'll have an update at the January meeting as well on the restrictor work. And that is all I have for NTAP.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Salerno. Any questions for Dan from the council? Anyone from the public? Council? Are you all set with us, Mr. Salerno?
All set, thank you.
Very good. Okay, so that brings us to the end of our reports. What I'd like to do is move on to Attorney McDonald to give us a guide on recusals and financial disclosure. Not much has changed since last year, and our two newest council members have just completed training, so they probably know more about it than we do.